And the best kind of temple is the temple of consciousness. And it's not about things, it's about love. And I'm sure that expansion is going to happen here. I'm just trying to think if there's some nice stories I can tell you about Prabhupada. I remember I came into Prabhupada's room one day and he looked up from his desk and he said, "What can I do for you, Bhargava Prabhu?" So I was melting in a spot. But Prabhupada, he had different moods, and they were all loving moods, but they were different. I personally don't feel this is my own feeling, and if it offends some people, this is just my feeling, that the process of initiation is not that important, but for me the connection is love. The real connection is love. And I took initiation from Prabhupada and I didn't really feel any special buzz. I was kind of frightened. Prabhupada was kind of scary. But not in a bad way. It's just scary because you didn't want to displease him, because you knew what a great person he was. So I didn't really feel that great connection other than through his books. Actually, it was about 15 months before I saw Prabhupada. First I was going to go to California and see him. I was in Boston. I was fired up. I got to see the guru. But then I started reading his books and I thought, well, maybe I should see what the guru is about before. Read and see what he's about before I go see him. And after a while, there was no urgency about going to see Prabhupada. And one at a time, I was discovering these books, these wonderful books, starting with Easy Journey to Other Planets, and Isha Upanishad, and then Little Purple Bhagavad Gita. And then I found these original volumes of the Bhagavatam, first canto, and I'd sneak up to near the roof of the temple, and I would open this treasure and start to read and enjoy the Bhagavatam. And then finally, Prabhupada showed up in Boston. So I was, part of me still was a little cynical about life, because I had taken drugs when I was younger, and I was kind of depressed about the material world. I thought, as the Bhagavad described, that it is full of like exploitation. It's not the realm of devotion and love, but it's a realm of exploitation, and people are exploiting each other. And when I had this realization, I realized I was just as bad as everyone else. It's just the nature of the material world, that everyone is doing business for sense gratification. So even though I read all these wonderful things that Prabhupada wrote, I wanted to see, was he really living this? So Prabhupada came off the plane in Boston, and it was one of those where they're outside, and Prabhupada came off the plane, looked very majestic in that afternoon golden light, and he came in, and that part of my mind is saying, what's he really like? And then he came in, and he was very happy to see the devotees. And one devotee had gone to the Botanic Gardens and taken a whole bunch of lotuses out. He made this big lotus garland, huge, down to Prabhupada's feet, and very heavy. And he put it on Prabhupada. And Prabhupada carried it with great grace. And I was already doing photographic work for the BTG. So there's a certain revelation a photographer gets. You know, people say, I don't want to be photographed. I don't want to be photographed, but they do. Because people want to be the center of attention. And so I was watching Prabhupada to see, because these reporters had come to interview Prabhupada and take photos. So I watched as Prabhupada faced the photographers. Because in that moment, as a photographer, I could really see the egos. So this was going to be my moment of truth. And Prabhupada turned and faced, and he had his cane, and he straightened himself up. And there was no big ego. He was a diplomat representing Krishna. That was the mood that he presented. It wasn't, look at me, aren't I wonderful? He was representing Krishna. He was very he was on a very serious mission, but a very loving mission. So that really struck me. And that's that part of my mind. The doubting, what do they call it? Doubting Thomas, Christians call that. So after that, I got to travel with Prabhupada in different parts of the world, and I could see he was traveling to plant seeds. And he didn't stay in one place very long. And he wanted to plant as many seeds as he could. And he knew the potency of these Krishna seeds. They are like very powerful weeds. You plant one in there and whoosh, many, many come up. So this was very important to him, to plant as many seeds as possible. And he pushed himself very, very hard. And even when he was sick, he kept a very strict sadhana. I don't want to take too much time, but there's little moments that show the beauty of Prabhupada. I remember in Paris, they made arrangements for big, so-called big people to come and visit Prabhupada, people who had some position. So they got this Vietnamese man who was the president of the French Buddhist Society. And he came to see Prabhupada, and also this French woman came in, and she was just a regular person, but it was open darshan. So the Buddhist gentleman, he was there, it quickly became evident he was there just to make a social call. We thought, we were young, we thought, oh, we're going to have a great discourse between Vaishnavism and Buddhism. But we were sorely disappointed. He was kind of like, I remember we used to go to Mathura on the train station, and they have these Brahmin dolls with like an axis in the neck, and it would go like this in the wind. So he was kind of like that. He was very... But there was no discussion. There's no exchange of ideas, of thoughts. What is the truth? And Prabhupada was very courteous towards him, and he had position, so if he could be courting a whole bunch of Buddhists in one sense by politically courting him. But there was this French lady in the room, and she, in this moment, in a kind of a moment of silence, she begged to ask a question, and Prabhupada turned his attention to her. And she really had sincere questions about who she was, what life was about. And Prabhupada turned his attention, not rudely, but appreciatively towards this woman, and he gave her quite a bit of attention. And that really struck me, again, that Prabhupada was not a politician, that his strength was not in manipulating people, manipulating the wealthy or the powerful, but his strength was in encouraging love for God and whoever was willing to accept this gift that he was offering. So that was a very beautiful telling moment for me. Another moment was when the last time I saw Prabhupada, which was at the last Mayapur festival. And Prabhupada was already somewhat ill, and he looked very drawn and thin. And Tarn Kanti Ghosh came to visit Prabhupada. And Tarn Kanti Ghosh, he came from a very exalted family in terms of, was it his grandfather or great-grandfather was great Vaishnav, contemporary of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Anyway, but Tarn was a politician. But he loved Prabhupada. And he had just come back from Pune, and he told Prabhupada, he said, he had seen Rajneesh's ashram, and he told Prabhupada, he said, you're the only one, delivering the true Dharma. But then, as politicians are, he brought to the point to Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, I come to ask your blessings in the election. Prabhupada looked at him and said, democracy is no good. So Antaran didn't know what to say, so there was this pregnant silence for about 30 seconds. And he said, well, democracy with so many political parties. Prabhupada said, no, democracy is no good. Prabhupada was a royalist. He believed that democracy worked on a village level, but on bigger levels it created all this power politics. So he did not favor it. Of course, he liked Raj Ram, the saintly king. By the end of the talk, of course, Tarn couldn't say anything. Prabhupada was a pure devotee, and he spoke the truth. And when you in the presence of a pure devotee, you cannot manipulate him. Even a powerful politician like Tarn couldn't. And actually, he was kind of enjoying bathing in this non-political spiritual atmosphere that Prabhupada created in that moment. In that moment where he spoke truth. Anyway, at the end, Tarn went over to Prabhupada and he put his head in Prabhupada's lap. And Prabhupada was rubbing his head just like a little boy, and Tarn looked like a little boy, and he was so happy. He wasn't thinking about the election at the end of the meeting. He was just really happy. What India. Anyway, he left. But there were three ladies sitting there who had no political position. They had just come in because it was kind of an open darshan. And actually, Prabhupada was sick and he just kindly got up for Tarn, who was always came to see Prabhupada when he could. And these three ladies were sitting there. And I don't think they really knew that Prabhupada was as sick as he was. And they were just there just to get the darshan of a holy man. And they didn't have any concept of talking deep philosophy. They're just nice ladies. I want to see the holy man. And Prabhupada turned his attention to them and was so gentle and so kind. He didn't have to preach heavily. And he was sick. Those of us who knew him were very aware of it. He was very drawn. But he patiently stayed with those ladies until they were satisfied. And then he went back into his room, and that was the last time I saw Prabhupada. But I was very impressed at how he treated those ladies, how he gave his energy in that way. And that was the ever-well-wisherism's energy. So it was little things like that that really impressed me about Prabhupada, not these, I mean, the books are there. And these great philosophical concepts are there. But this expression of ever-well-wisherism, that fascinated me because I personally am very far away from it. I just got into a terrible fight at the airport with one of the supervisors for the airlines there over something foolish. And I could not be like Prabhupada and be an ever-well-wisher in that moment. That was one of those big gaps. But I remember those moments of Prabhupada's beauty. And I aspire one day, maybe in future lives, the grace will come to me and I'll be able to be an ever-well-wisher. But until then, all I can do is try to serve that ever-well-wisher that I've met and serve, unfortunately, very imperfectly. But I can't go away. This is Prabhupada's own words, honey. He said, I'm always chastising this boy, but still he does not go away. He told someone else that. And then he said something nice. He said, so that is love. But I know me, and I know I'm very far away from the goal. But I know Prabhupada is there, and he's patiently waiting. And he's sending out his love, his Shakti, and his inspiration through his books and through his nice disciples, my God brothers and God sisters, and through you nice people who come not for any political position, not for any gain, but to enjoy with Krishna. I was in Nathadwar in the temple there, and they don't really call it a temple, they call it Nanda Bhavan. So when I came in and you were all chanting, and I looked at the deity, I thought, oh, this is Krishna and his villagers. And the deities almost looked like they were ready to take off and start dancing. So you're getting very close. So don't stop chanting. Anyway, I've taken too much of your time. And I thank you for letting me speak, even though I'm so imperfect in so many ways. You kindly let me share some of my memories with Prabhupada with you. And I ask for your blessing, that maybe that ever well wish spark that Prabhupada has sparked in me, maybe you can fan a little bit with a little prayer for me. Anyway, thank you very much. Hari Bol.
Hare Krishna. After hearing from these two great souls, it's pretty hard to be able to even think of anything to say. I apologize for that. But in reference to this glorious personality that we keep discussing, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, there's one thing that Prabhupada was that he always cared. He always cared about everybody and everything. He was very fond, he was very articulate with money. I remember when the opening of the Krishna Balaram temple happened, and that festival was started in Mayapur. And Jayavataka Swami had just bought and, you know, painted the temple and got it all very nice, and he'd bought these buckets. Well, at the time, it was 8 rupees to a dollar, and these buckets only cost 2 rupees. And there was new buckets in Prabhupada's room. And Prabhupada walked in the room, and he saw these new buckets. And he said, where are the buckets from last year? And he says, well, Prabhupada, this is the opening of the temple. We thought maybe, you know, why are you wasting Krishna's money? What was wrong with the buckets before? So Prabhupada was always very conscious of every single little tiny detail. Hey, just a stupid little two rupee bucket. And he could see the mismanagement, that the care and the concern and the consciousness that everything belonged to Krishna. You know? I give you money to be responsible in serving the Lord. It doesn't mean you take it upon yourself to speculate as to what you think is nice and what is not nice. You have to go along with the Shastra Guru and Sadhu, you know. So, one thing I kept trying to remember to tell you, and now of course I forgot, but I think that the most important thing that all of you probably know yourselves is that there's a certain feeling, an emotional feeling, because I see it on your faces. I see it when you dance, I see it when you chant, that there's a taste, a spiritual taste that you're not finding in any other part of, in any other existence or any other association. And that is what, like Bhargava was saying, he was saying that this can expand and take over the entire Bombay city, you know? And if I can help in any way to help you all become more and more Krishna conscious, you know, please allow me some service, because if you become Krishna conscious, it'll rub off and maybe I can get Krishna conscious. And the more we all become Krishna conscious, the more we dance, chant, and feast. And that's our philosophy. Which, by the way, I'd like to also mention that this process of dancing, Prabhupada always mentions everywhere, the process of our devotional life is chanting, dancing, feasting, and philosophy. And we all chant, we all love to feast, and we like the philosophy. But this dancing is an element that we seem to take lightly. But it's not a light thing. It's not an option. It's part of the process. Chanting, dancing, feasting. If you don't dance, then don't eat. Because it's part of the process. So, when you see the Lord is also seeing you. When you're taking darshan, He's also taking darshan. So in our mood, in the rasic flavors of developing our love and our softening our hearts, We should try to understand that elevated Krishna consciousness is seeing that Krishna is the one. That's the source, center, and purpose of everything. That we don't come here to take darshan of him. We come to have him see us. We don't come to take prasadam for our belly. We come because it's the mercy, it's the concentrated love of Krishna put in a way that we in a conditioned state can take. So we don't take prasadam as rice and dal and chapatis. We take love from Krishna. This is what prasadam is. It's not just we call it sanctified food, but it's Krishna's love to us. He's accepted the love of the offering, and Krishna reciprocates by putting love back into the prasad. So you don't take prasadam selfishly to enjoy your tongue. You take it as the love of Radha and Krishna. When you chant your Hare Krishna Maha Mantras, you don't chant them to become self-realized, or you don't chant them to become pure. You chant them because Krishna likes the sound of his name. So you chant the holy name to please Radha and Krishna, because their reciprocation will purify you. If you put Krishna in the center, he will satisfy all of your desires. In all of our life, especially this crowd, you've all have all the facilities to enjoy this material world. Everything that we've ever wanted in our lives, we've pretty much have gotten. Even all over the world, we get our desires fulfilled. So instead of asking for Krishna's stuff, we should ask for Krishna. This is what we need to understand, that we want Krishna. We're always asking, you know, Tata Sumo, nice family, a cinema, a nice car, whatever it is that we're asking for. The things that are in our hearts that we keep desiring, that we don't tell nobody. Krishna's fulfilling. So to understand this taste that Krishna is the center, we should try to understand that we want Krishna. We don't want Krishna's stuff. Krishna will give us the stuff. He is. He's always giving. We already see that clearly, blatantly, from birth to death, he's giving. But he doesn't give him, because nobody wants him. We're not asking for him. We're asking for his stuff. So take it in your heart that when you chant the holy name, you chant for their pleasure. When you take prasadam, you take it for their pleasure. When you come to see the Lord, you do it for their pleasure to see you. And in this way, Krishna consciousness will become a reality. It won't be a religion. It's not a process by which you get through this material life and you go, made it. No, it's love of Godhead. Just as Maharaj is saying, that if we develop a love for the purpose of having Krishna be loved. I mean, the thing that's really sweet, I was telling somebody last night about how what the biggest difference is between the East and the West of people is that most of us in the West were born out of hate. We were born from illicit sex life due to two intoxicated persons who got together, contemplating the objects of the senses. And then out of the obligation, the social obligation of having a pregnant woman, they had to be married. The man is lamenting, I don't know this woman, I've got to marry her now because there's this damn baby in the belly. The woman is thinking the same thing, God, I got this damn baby. So the child is born unwanted. We in the West are born, practically speaking, all of us are born unwanted. We're born with no love. We're born without any love. And Prabhupada, he came and he gave us love. That's why we have a special feeling for Srila Prabhupada, because we never had love. We didn't grow up with love. We grew up with business. Love is something we don't know. Prabhupada came and says, hey, I love you. And I'm going to give you that ocean of love. I'm going to give you Krishna. So for us, and this is the difference between you. Your parents were married way before you were born. And they decided consciously, we'll have a child. And you check with the stars, and they arrange, and they plan for you to be born. So you're born out of love. That's why you can have 20 people sitting in a room, full strangers, and you're all friends. You call each other Bhai Saab, because you have a love base. in your existence. We don't have that. So Prabhupada came, he gave us love. For the first and only time, he gave us, something that we're obliged to give back. Because we all have the romance of love. Wow, wouldn't it be great to be in love? You know, the desperation of the people of the West are to try to find that love. And that's why the degradation is there, because they don't know where to go. They don't know how to find it. So they pick this, they do that. And they extend the Western technologies. They go and expand the Western, material facilities, because they're just, it's actually an entire universe. That he came and delivered love of God. So you take this bounty of love, that tears from Lord Chaitanya's eye, and you drink it up with full gusto and share it with the world. Because that's home, that's love, that's life, that's reality. Everything else is just bogus. And there's no happiness anywhere without love. So thank you very much for allowing me to come here, and forgive me for my offenses and my sloppiness. I'm just, like in the making of America, for example, you know, we had pioneers, and they were the ones that came in and killed all the local people and chopped down all the trees and cleared the land and established for the future a new society. So some of us, we're just a bunch of dogs who don't really have any culture, don't have any love, don't have any really much intelligence. We just came and became Prabhupada's pioneers. We came in and tore up the land, and opened the spaces to bring in temples, and to take Prabhupada's books and help them, make them for them, and distribute them for them. We were the pioneers. So I'm not so qualified really to be a devotee. It was Prabhupada's mercy that he just said, well, you can go out there and you can knock stuff over, clear the land for me, because I want to put a temple of Krishna here. And so that's what I did, you know. So that the rest of the world, so in the future, there will be a society of love of Godhead, Krishna consciousness. So if you can just tolerate the rough edges and allow me your association, because I need it. I need your association, because you're the civilized group. You're the ones who are taking Krishna consciousness from within the heart in a sophisticated, loving, tender way. I don't know these things, so I need to have your association. So if you please allow me to come and take darshan and eat prasadam with you and chant, dance with you, I certainly appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All glory to Srila Prabhupada.